Hi, everybody. How's it going today?
So this is a panel about the music landscape for ad agencies and brands. And I just want to do a quick poll. How many folks here are artists, or how many are on the brand or agency side? Everybody who's an artist, raise their hand. Cool. So I will introduce our panelists here with me, starting with Johanna on my right.
Hi, I'm Joanna. I work with Elijah over at Massive Music as the Associate Creative Director. But I'm also here because I am a composer, as well as being somebody that writes for Sync. So I wear a lot of hats. Sometimes those hats can cross-pollinate, sometimes not. But I have a long history in touring. I was a tour dog for many years with bands like the Cranberries. I was in Nina Persson from the Cardigans band for a while. So I've had varying experiences in the industry that has led me to go into music house work, which I really enjoy. And Elijah happens to be my boss. Over to Todd.
Hey, everybody. Good morning or good afternoon. So I'm also a reporter. I'm a music supervisor. And most of my work is finding existing pieces of music to license, but I also do original compositions. I do what would be considered traditional placements over ads and things, but I also work in sonic branding and audio strategy for great big brands like AT&T and Sony Pictures and others. So,
I'm Lila Abregon-Wilson. I'm also a music supervisor. My company's Disco Cha-Cha. Very similar to Todd, probably less on the sonic branding because I do film and VR has become part of that film as a media. And we should say, I guess, there's San Francisco, New York.
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, there we go. We got all the cities. And I'm also in Austin, so there's Austin Nights. I've got that covered.
Thank you, guys. And I'm Elijah Torn. I'm the Global Executive Creative Director at Massive Music. I came from a composition background, but I also grew up in the music industry as well, so I've seen both sides for Sync and original music as well. So starting off with the questions and getting right to it, the business of being an artist that wants to break into this business for Sync or Bespoke as well, any ways, any tidbits on how to jump into this? And I'll pass this one to you, Lila.
So to get into it, for one, make music, 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 music. Create a catalog. Don't wait for somebody to tell you what to do so that you have things, you practice, because you're going to get into a world that's very fast moving, for one. So the best you practice at anything, the better you master it, basically. And to get into it, it's interesting. It's good to find people that are representing at different companies or sync agents or whatnot. Depends if you own your music or how you're approaching your music. Say you want to be an in-house composer, you want to be a writer. There's different outlets for it, but it's best to find outlets to help you drive your source before thinking you're an independent person, because it's a very crowded field of people. Mm-hmm. And that's not to be said that not all the work might be needed, you know, but you want to have contacts and you want to have those relationships.
I love the idea to get into the business, just keep creating.
Pre-creating, yeah, and meeting people.
Yeah. I think the creation part, I think, especially as someone who's beginning, is Lila, that's a really big point, is volume of work. Whilst we may not always say that that's the best possible way forward, I think if you are beginning, volume of work is the best way to get yourself heard. Because if you are sitting at home on a down day when you don't have any other work going on, look at the commercials, look at the films, look at what's happening, look at the trends, figure out how to create a song that sounds like that, not to copy it, but to bring yourself outside of your normal box and figure out how to utilize the instruments you have or the VST plugins you may have, even if you just have a microphone and a DAW you can find ways to create different percussive elements in your kitchen with pots and pans. Creating a library of music to pull from when a supervisor like Lila comes to you and says, I have 8 hours to turn this job around, what do you have? Then you have a library to pull from. And it makes you more appealing for someone like Lila to come back around because you've been fast, you've been efficient, you addressed the brief, you understood the assignment, and she's more than likely to come back to you. Even if you don't win that one time, she's going to know that she can rely on you to deliver the product that she's looking for. Maybe it might not be this particular job that you win, but it will be...
And a lot of it...
The relationship building.
Yeah, it's a relationship building because we basically get to know how you work and what you can do, and not everybody can write for everything. And so with getting in, when I say to build your catalog, it's basically like being anything in any competitive way. Like I played sports and I was a D1. And then I had somebody came to me, I have an agent now, the word music supervision, and I had somebody come to me and says, well, have your agent sign me, this and that, we need more. I'm Chicana, we need brown, we need more black people. It goes, not like that. You got to pay your dues, and they're going to draft you. And that's kind of what it is. So paying your dues doesn't mean that you necessarily have to spend money or anything like that. It's just starting to know your craft, own yourself, get to know yourself and what you can do. Because then when you're in this position, which is could be very stressful, you want to be able to... command it. Mm-hmm. And then, and like she said, it might not be this time, so you gotta get used to losing.
I lose a lot.
Just, yeah. But it's, you know, it's kind of like throwing plates and
I think knowing your craft is important.
Yeah.
You mentioned that, like creating volume, but also knowing what you're good at, because I don't think anybody on this side of the table is going to hear 20 million different things and be able to know what your voice is. Mm-hmm. And working on what you as an artist are, which I'm sure you have experience with, Todd, as well. Like,
yeah, for sure. I mean, I really appreciate when an artist sends me their work and it's cohesive. You know, they don't send me 20 tracks. They send me 5, and I can understand, oh, they're really good at pop production, or they've got really good chops at sort of modern orchestral sparse composition kind of stuff. And once I have that, I can either license the music they've sent me, but I also know that, hey, like, this person is really good, and when that need comes up again, I'm going to get them in the loop and see if they got what we need for that.
So on the other side of that, when a client comes to you and says, this is the project, we need music, what does that process look like for, like, behind the curtain for artists? What does your daily look like for a project?
Well, you know, I'll try to move quickly through this because this is
well,
an entire panel. Yeah,
well.
Exactly. There's kind of two ways it can go. The basics are they either have an edit and they've been working on placing music and something's not working out, or they have a tent track that they, you know, put in there for the edit, but they can't actually have that. Or a lot of times I'm in creative development. So they're sending me boards, a script maybe, for a project they want to do with a client. And from that, I'll develop a playlist, some directional music, and we hopefully land the project based on that and continue our music exploration along those lines. And really it is, you know, there's with from there, there's maybe 2 or 3 directions. Find existing music, and that's usually for either a project that's on a very fast pace or a project that needs maybe a name brand, you know, if you want to get a Kanye song or something like that, that's one way to go. Or it's maybe commissioning an artist to do an original piece, or maybe it's a cover of a classic song that we all know and love, but they want it to sound more modern or in a certain genre that the original was not created in. That's it. And from there, I reach out to my 95% of my most trusted vendors and allies, and I try to make 5% for new people that I think might have what it takes to pitch on this thing.
Does it make a difference if you're on those original batches of, you know, the treatment part of it? Like when you pull music as references for a project that they don't know what they want, to be a fresh artist in that batch, does that?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it, you know, if you're able to get in and if there's love for the music, that can make all the difference. You know, it happens quite often that the music we pull in this sort of initial directional phase is the music that sticks around through the end. It kind of is depending on how good the communication is between the clients and their clients. But if everybody aligns around a certain track, it can work. I did a Samsung campaign and was ready because they're sort of, you know, they consume a lot of music and they're very, you know, they want a lot of options. And we go through thousands of tracks per thing. And with the first batch I sent, they were like, this. And I was like, yeah, right. But it fucking stuck. You know, like it went all the way through and this really nice indie band that I really had never worked with. They were brought in on this and there was the first time I'd, you know, done anything with them. Got this nice big Samsung sustainability thing. So it's good. And that's an exception, but that's how it can work.
That is the exception, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Exception.
Unless you're on the other side and it's demo love and yeah. It's challenging that brand. I mean, it's a similar process to how we work for bespoke and creating original as well from the beginning of the project as well. I don't know if you want to talk about the different side of that and the differences of that, Johanna.
Yeah, I mean, oftentimes we will start when we're working on a bespoke project quite similar to how you would start with a template. We have either a script, a cut, or a deck, and we get given a general idea of what they're going for. I think I will speak for us both when I say what we really like to do is be the people that creates the Spotify playlists and helps to bring the music to the table in a way that we see it happening creatively. It doesn't always happen that way. Most of the time, especially lately, clients will come to us saying, we've been really feeling this song, but it doesn't totally hit correctly. And it's our job to pick out what it is that is working and what it is that isn't working. And then we would engage composers based on that research and development phase that we think might or will hit the brief in the way that it needs to be executed.
And just real quick, for people who are super fresh, bespoke means original new music. Mm-hmm. So that you.
Thank you, Lila. Yeah. So this is just writing a piece of music from scratch, engaging a composer and saying, okay, hi, we have this job for this brand. They've been really feeling this genre of music and this type of thing. And we feel that it would be really great to keep these elements out of this genre, but we want to hear what you would do with it. And so that's how
they're,
we would.
They're divergent paths, basically, to, you know, to get to the same goal versus an existing piece of music that you've already written that will work against whatever the project is versus the client wanting specific requests and tweaks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do want to also point out, again, for people in the room that aren't familiar with the process, when we're talking about directional music, like maybe the template, the temp track that clients might provide, we're not specifically going to go and knock that off. It's more of a way that we can all communicate. So, you know, we're music people. Our clients sometimes are. The head client who asks his daughter, what's going on in the music scene is not. So we're able to provide these tracks that exist and say, okay, this is kind of the energy, you know, the type of vibe, the genre of music. We want to create something new that's based on the vibe of this, not the actual song. We don't want to do that.
Never want to do that.
Yeah.
And getting on a common page about what the musical language is from our side of the music world versus not knowing that.
It's really like the most efficient way to communicate if you're able to do that. And that's why putting together these Spotify lists and playlists that are like, hey, this feels like your vibe. You might not be able to get these tracks, but let's talk about this as, you know, what are your preferences from this playlist? And then you go from there.
Yeah, and then tonally in production value, you can really grab so much from that depending on the type of kick drum that is used across that Spotify playlist. Like, are we talking an 808 that seems to be across all of these songs on this Spotify playlist. Oh, is that also an 808 in that temp track? Or maybe we need to think about what that genre is, or what, how we can marry those elements that that client is really liking, yet find something that's unique to that brand.
Or even just something as simple as the client says they want underproduced and raw sounding, but they reference T-Bone Burnett productions from films that have million-dollar plus budgets. That's their idea of underproduced, but we have to communicate what is underproduced about that and which artists could work for that or which composers could work on that. And I think in further clarifications on the difference between the custom music side of it and writing music to be licensed as well. I think there's a different expectation on our side and also as artist side as well. I think a lot different goes into the process. I don't know if you want to talk about the original side of that, Johanna.
Sure, on the original bespoke or the original sync.
The original bespoke or sync.
So I think there's vast differences for both and similarities of both. I am with a license agent. I'm with Zinc for my band projects. And I will often get a brief in that is, we're looking for an overall general theme of this with these types of lyrics, and we're referencing this song that we think would be really great tonally for your band. But they really are looking for an artist song. Within that, they're looking for a conventional verse, chorus, bridge, out. However, with sync licensing, when you are writing for sync, you are not always writing as an artist. You are also considering this as a commercial, viably commercial entity. So when we think about writing to a song to be placed in a film, we're not necessarily writing for ourselves to put this song on an album. And the reason is because every 8 or so bars, something has to change. You have to take out something, you have to bring something in. You have to have at least 8 bars in your song where there's just percussion or a drum thing. It ramps up, it comes back down. There are things about that type of writing that you have to always maintain, even though you are writing as an artist for sync. So the similarity there between that type of writing and bespoke is that when we're writing bespoke music, we are writing to a cut. So we are looking visually at hit points, a batting cage. There's a moment of a lull between a couple before they kiss. On a commercial, those are points that you want to hit. So even though the writing is slightly different, coming from a different kind of place within yourself, it's still the same type of thing. You have to be looking at those hit points. If you're writing a sync song, you have to be looking at whether you're changing everything changing something every 8 bars. What are your lyrics like? Are they universal? Are they insular? Are they all about me, myself, and I? Chances are you're going to be great for a romantic comedy. You're not going to be great for a Macy's commercial if you're singing about love and me, myself, and I.
Can we share the keywords that you are always facing in these?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
For writing custom music.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Let's go.
Home. Together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Universal.
Anthemic.
Yeah. Anthemic. Yeah. Universal.
Explosive.
You come a long way, that kind of thing.
There is one thing with writing, too, is that your editors, unless it's some jarring piece, editors rarely do not cut to music when they're making an edit. So we get it in a rough form, so it's not really super tight, but it's our job to kind of ask to get closer to that super tight cut, because we need to hit those points, and that's going to be more work for you when you don't have that rough cut locked. But an editor generally is rhythmic in there. So when you're writing, it's not going to hurt you. Mm-hmm. It actually flows and helps instruct you. So it's first the reference of the vibe of what they're trying to get, and that's usually more of how they're defining their language. It's the common language. That reference is king on that. And then the edit will help you, and the editor tends to not make you your life hard.
Yeah, and sometimes you get super lucky. You know, you've got there's songs that are 4 minutes long with two chords that do nothing. And sometimes that just really fits the brief and the brand. And so, you know, what we're all saying up here is just the way that we're used to working and the things that we've seen. But, you know, at the end of the day, the music will always speak for itself, regardless of whether you have those 8 bars change or you're a seasoned commercial composer. I mean, we have tons of seasoned commercial composers who don't win over the newbie composer that we're trying for the first time. It's, you know, there's definitely a general formula to it, but I wouldn't say that sync writing and bespoke writing are all that different. The only difference I would say is that you have more of an ability to be malleable when you are bespoke writing. You're writing for a brand. It's a specific campaign. You're more likely to win because you are honed in on something that you already know the brand wants.
And it's anonymous, too, is another perk as well. So whereas all the work you put into doing your music as an artist is sort of behind the scenes and in preparation to license or sync a piece of music, it's sort of in front of everybody on the custom side.
Yeah, that's very true. I have a personal passion project, wildly unsuccessful, never had a sync. Don't care. That's my thing. That's the way I write. That's the music I love. I have the sync writing, which makes money, and that's cool too. You know, it's understand the assignment.
So we sort of talked about what's desirable for placement for sync and sort of what creatively hits for sync as artists as well. We also went through the keywords too of
home,
together.
Yeah. Swagger.
You come a long way. Yeah. Looking good.
Swagger more on the writing new music for commercials as well. Yeah. The expectation of engagement on syncing a piece of music versus writing a fresh piece of music for a project or a commercial, I think there should be cleared up a little for everybody who's just getting into this business as well, because it is a different workflow. I think with sync, you're putting the work in before time to make a track that's viable for placement, but commercial writing original for is going to be a different process, and the budgets are vastly different too. So I don't know if Lila, you want to talk to those differences or
that becomes funny because I've been on all sides. I've been on the music house side, I guess is what we say, these so-called jingle houses traditionally, and then in-house at an agency, and then I went freelance. I have mostly fashion clients now, so it's very different. I went from like J&J clients and just pharmaceutical type to Microsoft to very commercial, and then fashion is
Yeah.
Go for some of that.
So pharmaceuticals, and then you have union, non-union situations too with yours, and it gets harder. That's why it's good to have somebody that you are representing you. But so budget wise, I mean, digital. I was in J. Walter while I watched digital come in and basically kill the traditional advertising world. But the one thing they also did is they killed budgets. Mm-hmm. That's why I also say right, because basically then you have a bank that's just, I ask composers that I trust all the time, just send me your music, and I have a recollections juice where I sit there, I'm like, okay, I'll know this will be here, I know this is here, and I'll say, I'll make you money while you sleep. And the thing is like, some of those, I have very big composers that will let something go for a lower budget, we won't attach the name, but that's gonna pay a bill somewhere, you know, and whatnot. But it's about being precious and knowing where you want to let go. We as music supervisors try to protect our artists. We do, but we're also dealing with our clients, right? So we need work from them as freelancers. So there's a balance that we have. I'm very transparent with budgets, but usually it's your car commercials and what your car and soda and they'll drinks liquor brands vary. On insurance. Budgets, yeah, insurance. Yeah. It's funny what has more. Pharmaceuticals, ironically, has a lot more money. And guess how boring that is, right? Yeah. You know, it's like a lot of banjo, a lot of, can't make them feel too happy. Can't make them feel too sad. You can't, this neutrality. And that's what it's good about watching commercials, And then with fashion, you know, sometimes I've got real small budgets, but I'll bring it out to people because a lot of people want to be attached to the content involved. And it could be very cool content, and that can, I mean, honestly, that can range as low as 500 and go all the way up. And all the way up usually means a bigger name, unfortunately. In this game, it's just the way it is. So budgets, it's kind of hard. They've been shrinking.
Yeah, and we don't always get to know them right off the bat either.
Yeah.
But then I think that a lot of the desirable projects, they know that as well. So that might not also be a huge budget because they know that they want to be attached, and we will jump on that. Yeah. And you guys should as well because it does build.
It builds your relationships,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. And the irony about original music or bespoke music is that usually a client goes with that because it's a media usage, so they can own it because it's a work for hire in the end. So they end up buying it. You hold your rights. Don't give up your writer's rights. You get it. There's certain splits that happen and how it works out. But watch out for buyouts and that kind of scenario where somebody says, we're going to pay you for your song. We're owning it. The bespoke and original music is almost an answer to licensing a bigger song at times because a client will have like 20 different versions, and each to a licensed track, a big one, or even stock, those usages, a needle drop we call them, will add up. So the original music means they can take it and then they can play it. You know, they'll keep it. They'll do it for as long as their campaign lasts, and the residuals still work out okay on the back end too. That's which is nice on those levels, but that's kind of the game plan of a client. So sometimes you would think you'd be more money, but no, you're actually solving their problem of budget.
So it's be careful, but also don't turn down
don't
too
turn
much
down
because
too much. Yeah, because then you're putting yourself in a spot where
Yeah, and I think we should point out too that, yes, budgets are falling, but there's exponentially more content to work on. I mean,
lots of content.
I went from clients that probably did 3 or 4 things a year, and now they're doing like at least 100, 200 pieces a year because they have so many needs. And plus, add in a little bit of pandemic when they're not meeting with people in person, they need content and messages that are flowing all the time to their clients.
And I went from Instagram to TikTok. Yeah.
And most of these lower budget deals are not exclusive. So that means you can work with, let me name people who are not clients of mine. You can work with Twitter and then go and do something with TikTok or something, you know, like.
Or then have it on a pharmaceutical commercial.
And have it on a pharma thing and have it on a, yeah.
At the same time.
At the same time.
Make more money.
Yeah.
So what might look like $500 could actually be $5,000 if you play it smart, or $50,000.
And I've had quite a few songs where I've seen like, oh, it's there. And honestly, some clients don't like that. They'll call for exclusivity, but we have it within the brand. So if it's a car thing, exclusivity is sometimes amongst all car dealers. It doesn't mean another place because, honestly, one viewer doesn't necessarily look at everything.
Yeah.
But that's something you have to be careful about, too. If I came to you, like one of my clients is Coach, and I came to you and I got a song and you didn't tell me that you just gave it to another clothing brand, it might be kind of problematic. And I can't go look up every clothing brand, but you should be aware if there's a competitor involved, kind of keep that in mind.
Or just the notification and the communication that it's anywhere that it exists in any form.
I usually, as I get closer to licensing a song, will ask if there's any other syncs out there, especially if there's anything competitive, because the clients do care at the end of the day. They don't really want to see their pieces of music on somebody else's brand.
Part of their identity. They'd lean on music a lot to find that identity.
That said, if they do ask for exclusivity, it comes at a price, and that price is usually fairly good. And just watch the product category, because if they're asking for electric toothbrushes, that's fine. But if they're asking for consumer electronics, that is a huge market segment that they should pay you to be out of.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. I think this also comes back to having that relationship with the people that are repping your music and helping you to move forward in your career, is to be transparent with the people that you're working with about what you are okay with, what you are not okay with, making sure that if you license something that has a non-exclusive license and then you're giving it to someone like Lila, that they know that it's out there already for another brand. Creates a level of trust and communication and partnership, because it is a partnership, you know.
And also, if you, like, if you don't want to, I mean, is Fugazi straight edge? I've had Smirnoff come to me and say, we want Fugazi. I said, you can't, they're straight edge, they don't do a liquor. You know, you're allowed to have limitations.
They don't do anything.
They don't do anything.
Yeah, I've gone to them from the NBA, and they're like, we love basketball, but no.
No.
Yeah.
I think also talking about the budgets and the exclusivity, the expectations for if you have a song that has 100,000 plays on Spotify or 1 million plays, the budget that you'll get for that for sync and the work that you'll be asked to do, where that could just be a placement or you could deliver stems and the editor could make changes, you will get a higher final fee than if you write original and there's 15 revisions that you have to handle for something that you've created that day with a different final fee. It's not going to be, and we've seen this a lot with artists who come over and write original music after syncing a track for $50,000, $100,000. And then they're like, well, I just had to do 15 changes for this and I made $8,000 to $10,000. Why am I putting in this much work for it? Because it's a different workflow. And to Lila's point, like, you could make $8,000 to $10,000 there while also syncing your other work, and you have different creative control as well.
Yeah. And don't forget, unless you do a buyout or some sort of exclusivity deal, that track exists and it is something that's viable for other uses, and you create something that can go on.
Yeah, you can take the original piece if you like the rhythm section for that and build it into something that you can put on an album and sync it as well.
Guilty.
That's why it's good to have a catalog, because if you sit there and you follow trends and you just practice and figure out your niche. Mm-hmm. If somebody comes to you with a brief and they ask for certain instrumentation, you're like, oh, but I have that. I just got to change this. It's there for you. You've got a map.
Yeah, being prepared with creative templates so that you're ready to go. What's the best way to get in touch with supervisors and creative directors to make this happen for all the new artists out there?
Do I go first?
You can go first. Yeah. Yeah.
You have an opinion.
You have all the fashion.
LinkedIn is probably one of the hardest. Yeah. I can't. I barely go there. I make a joke, and it's with love, but mine looks like a dating site for singer-songwriters. And I just it's really hard to keep up because it's the way the links are. So with me, I actually have an email. It's easy to find me. I do tend to go through references, so somebody else who referenced someone, then I'll listen more, just because it's a trust thing, and we honestly get sent so much music. And that's where it's also good to have somebody that helps you represent you. And that being said, though, I've been an artist come to me, or in fashion. Fashion keeps me on my toes. I have editors that pull things out. I have no idea where they find them. And I have to go out there and get it and within a day or 2 days, and it's a new artist or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I'll start talking to that person and be prepared for that. And that's, you know, a question, and I have to go. That's a good thing, too. Have your stuff where you can find it. If you're registering on PROs, awesome. One gentleman who has Pineapple Skies, and his email wasn't working, so he kept missing licenses. But I had another contact I was able to follow. If you're on Facebook, if you're on Instagram, if you're on Twitter, if there's a way to get a hold of you if you're kind of smaller and somebody might find you, it's easy for me to find you.
Yeah, being organized on that as well.
Being organized to find that, having your stuff in those places. And then it's sending, I tend to listen, and Todd said too, and I think we've all said that, for some reason, LinkedIn was our enemy.
Yeah. LinkedIn is a place for corporate business.
Yeah.
I get a lot of Instagram messages from composers, and I have to say, and I don't know, I cannot speak for anybody else, I appreciate the links.
Yeah.
I always listen to them.
Yeah.
I may not always get back to you, but I always listen, and it always goes into a database. I have a Google spreadsheet that Elijah has. And when we're going down the list of looking for specific composers, I have keywords. I listen to the reels. I really do. And I put your name in. I put your email in. Especially because I started out that way, and I was the one that was emailing random people being like, how can I get you to hear my music? a one sentence, I don't need your life story. I love you all. I don't need your life story. But I do want to hear your music. I always want to hear it. I always listen to it and I take it. And I think you just have to trust that the people that you send those things to will eventually listen to it. And if they have something for you, they will reach out.
And just be patient too.
Yeah. You know, it doesn't happen overnight, but it will happen.
And even like Instagram, when you email a stranger, you're not on primary messages, right? And so I even have to deal with that when I reach people. So be patient. Because when you get, what do you think? What do you have? You know, and it's, we can't answer those.
That makes me not want to write back.
Yeah. It's very difficult to write back to that because we aren't the people that are the end all. Yeah. It's others that
right.
we're dealing with.
Right, yeah. And so, it might not yeah. even be relative yeah. at so, that time. It yeah. might just be coincidence. Yeah. You reach out when you have a coach project, and it might be perfect. But
and yeah. then it might be totally.
And then you're like, oh, I remember this reel I got. Wow, I've got to reach out. And a couple of people I even said, like, feel free to continue to email me, like once a month or once every few months. Let me know what you're up to. Send me a reel. I still will probably not write back, but I do receive the email and I read it and I listen to the music. And sometimes, and it happened recently with Nigel, he wrote me an email saying, I just produced this artist, Mothica, and here's a new track. And I was like, oh, you'd be perfect for this project. And he won. And it was only yeah. because he'd emailed me the week before with something random that had nothing to do with the brand I was working on, where I was like, oh, he'd be so perfect as a composer for this. So we had him write something bespoke for it, and he won.
The keywords yeah. are better than your life story, because yeah. like mine, I'll put a music box, and if somebody says, I want something that sounds like this, I'll do a search. And then boop, yeah. there goes your, cool. there's your email.
Yeah, and Joanna had an important point that's really important, which is respectful check-ins, you know, like the timing of that email saying, hey, you know, yeah. Just checking in. I just finished something. Like, it's really nice to include a link so we can like, oh, yeah, this guy. Because a lot of times, yeah, like I said, I'm reaching out to all my usual contacts. But your email that comes in on that day when I'm just got a project over my desk, I'm going to check that out because I'm
but
a big believer.
Don't email every day and don't
no,
email every week.
No, that day. Yeah. Just, so
it's a timing thing, not.
Yeah.
And
it's not because we don't want to. We just genuinely don't have the time.
Yeah. Yeah. From home means 100 emails a day.
Yeah.
But we're speaking on part of a lot of music supervisors too, because this question comes up a lot. And some you'll go to the website and I'll be like, no submissions. Mm. You won't always, I would say our group is friendlier. To be honest, I do listen to everything too, but just be aware it's more of that timing thing because
you listen to everything, but usually when it's a link, if you're don't email MP3s, yeah.
no,
don't do Dropbox,
a streaming
links.
Link, yeah,
yeah, not, streaming
no link. SoundCloud, please.
No.
Disco, I like Dropbox, but yeah. Disco and Dropbox are
I
kind
like
of
Dropbox
my life,
too.
Yeah.
A little tidbit, Lila, actually, I think you gave me my very second sync ever, and she doesn't remember, and I know she doesn't because she's like, oh,
what
was it?
Brand?
I think it was Sephora.
Okay.
Or maybe it was.
You don't even remember.
I don't think I remember. It was Sephora, and it was like $300, and it was like 10 years ago.
Oh yeah.
It was a long time ago, and it was so. I was so excited, and I was already making more money on other syncs, but to have the opportunity for me as someone who was starting out. No, it was.
Because I know I've done a few.
It was someone else. I can't remember.
That's funny. I have trusted resources where I know they can hit certain budgets for me. And sometimes yeah. I'll send them because I know the content is there. And it's like, you know, I know you have artists that want to do something. But the Sephora, for instance, one of the adverts I did for them was like one of the most diverse, gotten awards for diversity at Christmas and had all these. Well, we had problems with Muslim violence. They featured a bunch of Muslim and trans and this and that. So it's like, that's the good part on the other side of it.
Yeah, and say yes to the opportunity. Say yes to the feedback. Appreciate the feedback. Yeah.
And you mentioned you were working on other stuff when Lila reached.
Yeah,
out.
I think I was
you might
making
have been on tour
like I was on tour. I'm making shit tons of money
so
on tour and I was already making sync money, good money, and she was like 300 and in my head I'm like 300
but
bucks.
You also responded and you
but
were
I,
organized
but I also
as well.
Checked myself and realized respectfully I'm being offered an opportunity for my passion to be heard and monetized What a gift. What an amazing opportunity for that. And I think that there needs to be more of an element of like, we need to all be yes people to a certain degree.
And not all music is Fraser's, but I do try to look out for my people.
Yeah.
I really do. I owned a venue. They were all artists. I know what everybody is trying to do. It's freaking hard. It's hard to tour. You're not everybody's getting money when they're touring.
Nope.
What do you appreciate, like in fostering those relationships with you, what will keep you responding and hitting up people and checking what they've got that's new and responding in that relationship? What can an artist or a composer bring you all back to the table when you do reach out?
When I'm comfortable knowing that you have everything and you own it, and it's not everywhere else and signed to somebody, because if you create a lawsuit for me, that's the biggest problem that I'll have.
And time efficiency,
and, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And then time efficiency, usually my breeze because of the fashion week. Well, Todd touched on this with licensing music. It's usually a faster situation, and my turnaround will be 1 day, 2 days to get something to the clients. It's answering within that. I always ask people if they need more time, and I will listen to them and say, okay, I can give you more time. And then being honest with where you're at. So I've had touring people. I've had people that take their rigs with them, knowing that they can be on tour and they're going to make edits to their music and everything. But as long as, if I know more about what you're doing and your dedication to the craft, I'll help you maneuver that time and make it work. I'm not going to throw you to the wolves.
It doesn't have to be oversharing, but knowing that if the artist is on tour and they have a sound check at 4:30, you might not hear from me for 2 hours.
And
but
that's
then
a selling point to a client.
Yeah.
Hey,
huge.
My artist is on tour.
I literally just had this happen where we had a track that we were kind of going back and forth in the edits with the editor, and I was editing the track, and I was like, wait, let's have the artist do this. He's on tour with Herb Alpert right now, but we're going to grab him in between sound checks, and he's going to make an edit that's his recommendation. And it really helped. We didn't go with his edit, but it was like that involving the artist and having them be part of the process, because his track was not picked at that point, actually really helped, and they eventually got the sync, just a different edit.
And we have the same thing with creating custom music as well, and so many of our go-to composers are on tour, were on tour. Mm.
They'll let us know.
The
hassle's real.
Oftentimes with bespoke music and bespoke curation, you will have, as everyone said already, there's it's a long game when you're creating something bespoke for a brand. So you can't just create your demo, send it off and go, okay, that's my job done. You have to be available for tweaks. A good thing to do is to always ask your music supervisor or your creative director or your producer within the music house or agency, when are you shipping? Track the calendar with your people, because chances are you're going to be asked at 8:00 in the morning to revise your track 500 times. And that's fine. That's just part of the job. It is part of the job.
And we've been asked to revise it 1,000 times.
We're trying to buffer
that and be your friends.
Yeah. And if you tell us also that, you know, hey, I'm going away for the weekend. Okay, we need to hire an editor. There's the transparency surrounding the beginning to the end of the job is so important from an artist perspective or a composer perspective. And for us to know that is really important.
I think transparency is the magic word, because even us, when we're going out for budgets, if we say I only have 300 and I get the music and everything, and then 3 days later you're coming back going, I wanted 1,000. I can't do that. You know, it's like, that's where if your music supervisor isn't transparent with all the details, go ahead and ask them.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to limit yourself in your yeses and nos, you want to know those limitations, and they should have that information.
And you want to know why.
They should have it. If they don't, they might be dealing with a fussy client, but they should have it. So it's, you know, what's the budget? What's the timing? And knowing those things and then falling in line helps us soldier on as well.
I think we'd rather get a seemingly silly question than getting follow-ups afterwards, like why surprises.
Or we need you to edit these drums, sorry I can't for 2 more days. No, that doesn't work.
I think we have 15 more minutes left, so if anybody has any questions, any thoughts, anything, we do have a microphone there.
Oh yeah.
Good.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good. My name's Jason. I run submitmusic.io. We own and operate about 20,000 recordings. We're about to launch a commercial library. Mm-hmm. So just about to enter this space and just about to kind of build up a big network. I know you already touched on this. I just was looking for a little more advice about entering the community, getting in whatever Facebook groups, Discord chats. How do you do your research when you find lists and lists of opportunities for your library? People suggested IMDb, you know, do a little more on that would be great.
I think Todd's got
it. Yeah, I actually failed to put out, I'm on the board of music supervisors, Guild of Music Supervisors, which if you guys aren't aware of this, it's a fantastic organization, not just for music supervisors, but for content creators, labels, publishers, or if you're interested in music supervision especially, go and check it out. We do, you know, in coming out of pandemic times, but there were quite a few social events we did. Now most of them have moved online, but you can join up or just be able to check out some of our content. It's a fantastic way to network with the actual people who are doing the music work on the shows, ads, films that you really love, and it's a really great place to meet people.
And they do have a YouTube page, so you can go back and look at panels that we've done online.
Yeah.
To get to know names and characters and who's doing what. Which is very important, because then you'll find out how we want music as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have the ability to not be in person and see who's there and be able to know their work as well. And the guild goes for both sides too, because most music houses that do original music also are involved in that as well as supervisors.
Facebook does have Sync This as a group.
Yeah.
You do have to go into it, but there's daily, there'll be people looking for music. Sometimes it's a great, and then you can also see, like, somebody will say, oh, I want this, and I'll see who put, and somebody will say following, because it just means you're like, oh, who brought this up?
Yeah.
You still, it doesn't mean everybody on there is credible, so please, you know, it's not, that's the one thing, yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate very it. Credible people do use that service.
Yeah, they do use it, but it doesn't mean it's the end all, yeah.
How you doing?
Good. My name's Andrew. I'm involved in a business that connects artists and brands. But beyond the sync relationship, beyond the music, have you found that brands, through the maybe the starting the relationship via a sync opportunity, but then want to get more deeply involved with the artist in other kind of ways? Could you maybe all speak on that for a moment? Because I think it's a really interesting point.
Number one, that's always my dream, is to have a secondary activation, a relationship that we start with an artist. The gateway right now, of course, is content and social media. So if an artist does something with a brand, they might either support the message by retweeting or sharing or talking about it. But the best ones are where you can go in, make something original with that artist, maybe document it with a film crew, turn it into something that's basically like a case study, which works for the agency, for the clients, and for the fans of the artist and in general the artist. So these sort of implied endorsements or collaborations are amazing. That's
great way
what I love to
cross-pollinate.
Do.
Those films are my favorite. They're really great because you get to see the artist in action and tied to the brand as well.
Hey, good to see you. This is a bit of a in the weeds question. I'm a lawyer. I'm an advertising lawyer. I do a lot of music licensing across.
I'm a lawyer too.
Are you?
Yes. I'm a first generation immigrant. Mommy told me to become not.
Yeah, Lila.
I have that school loan.
I can't top that. I'm first generation college graduate. How about
there
that?
You go.
There you go. So an issue that I run into with almost every sync license is public performance. And the specific issue I have is this. I've got a brand, they've got a website. They don't have public performance licenses on their website, but of course they want to put their commercial on their website. And certainly the big publishers are never willing to deviate from the fact that, you know, this license agreement does not include public performance royalties and you need to secure licenses and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I've been mildly successful at times in getting them to waive public performance royalties on owned and controlled sites. But sometimes I can't even get that. I have never seen a publisher sue a brand for using it in an unlicensed fashion in that manner. And so I think that's just sort of the unspoken rule. I wish I could. I mean, so have you all experienced that, and do you have a magic solve for it?
Yes, no.
And can we talk more about Fugazi?
Yeah, yes, no. Yes and no.
I had Fashion Runway, right? That's a big one. We had Michael Kors, Mario played, sing his Prince song. We'd do certain songs. The lawyer came to me. We happened to go to the same law school, too, so it was funny, and said, oh, the contract, just like you said, doesn't cover it. And I said, what venue are you at? And that was the first thing I asked the producer, what venue are you at? And they happened to be at a venue, and that venue, I mean, I owned a venue, and in my part, I had to pay BMI and ASCAP licenses. That's traditionally covered by that, but I've also had them sing live in Bryant Park. It's a little bit gray area, and that's where it's not black letter law. It's kind of by practice. And they're more worried about probably overexposure than anything, and that's the UBC. The unfortunate thing is that the performer doesn't necessarily get that necessary back end because it's treated as digital media once it's up there, and you can't grab from that. So, and that's the venue thing. As a venue, I fought tooth and nail to give them, I had indie artists. I said, well, you're not paying my indie artists. They're not getting anything from their gigs, and DJs are now can submit playlists. And everything, but we always knew like radios, you know, who got the money. So it's a gray area, and it's kind of exactly what you said. Who sues? And unless you have a litigious person on there, like I mean, it was Prince, and I had to make sure. But they knew it was a live performance. They knew it was going there. They didn't ask me about the venue. But if I had. I don't know. They wanted to mention his name in PR. We didn't clear PR, so we couldn't use his name on any press from Michael Kors itself. If journalism picks it up, that's fair game, fair use, right? So yeah. So it's a matter of practice and knowing the clients and getting to know who likes to sue. And that's another one.
This is Lila's follow-up panel, by the way.
This is a legal world of.
It's
a really sticky. Everybody else get subject.
Out of here, Lila. It's sticky because they tell you're taught something, and you're told something, and then when the practice, I mean, you're not even supposed to contract for free, right? We were told that.
Right.
But there's gratis licenses all the time. So yeah, and that's actually a breach of contract, guys. That's you put a zero amount. That's not supposed to be a contract in law school.
You know, it's other good and valuable considerations.
Yeah,
you know,
like,
bragging rights and publicity. Well, to your point about the venue, and I asked him permission to follow up on that, so hopefully I won't get in trouble. But when you talk about venues, I mean, I have very direct firsthand experience, and you probably do too, because certainly in circles everybody knows about this, but the big hammer that was brought down over the last couple of years, primarily on professional sports teams who have licenses for their venues, so they play music in the venues, and their social teams were capturing video in the venues and posting it on social. No sync license. You know, your ASCAP and BMI licenses don't give you the right to capture the video and then post it on social. And, you know, every single sports team has been forced into a massive settlement because
of that. User-generated content is the new word, right? UGC.
Yeah, well, this is staff-generated content.
And that's for TikTok, too, because if it goes viral and you can't control when those people there, you're not going to tell them to take it off their site.
Yeah.
So,
unless it's my daughter, and then I'm going to tell her to take it off.
The sports thing, the thing is that the PROs have to catch up.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of it. Yeah. And they haven't caught up with digital. And that's why our budgets are also suffering, because people are like, oh, it's free, it's this, that. And so, but UGC does, people are starting to, and they do understand that in the label world, the publishing world, and the bigger, and the majors. But it's unfortunately, it's a fight that the PROs are catching up. And we saw it with Netflix, we saw it with streaming rights, we saw that happening, YouTube. And even now, like I say, with TikTok, like everybody's catching up, like, well, how's it gonna be used? And the questions are hilarious. We used to do it out of home, right? What was OOH? We're like, well, is it going to be in your bathroom? Yeah. Is it going to be on a billboard? You know, it's at the gas station. You can go get gas and music's playing in a commercial. Yeah. So it's a catch-up immediate. Don't feel too bad.
I do think in Texas there are some bathrooms that were out of home, but there's my joke for the day.
Right. Thank you.
How you going? My name is Jeffrey. I was just curious with regards to stems and also with regards to like initial emails, It's hard not to sound kind of corny when you're, like, I've just done a record with my friend from this band, Habibi, and it involves members of, like, the Avalanches and stuff like that. But is that distasteful to include, and or what kind of keywords are you looking for?
That's a good question, because it's actually something that leads to good. You go.
Yeah, no, you go. I want to hear what you
said. Yeah,
no stems. Have stems. Don't necessarily send them, but in your email, if you say, I have stems. And I can make changes. That is huge.
I can edit. I can make changes.
I can take out instruments. I have the stems for you. Most of the time, a lot of the brands will ask for stems to do re-edit. Doesn't mean they're going to mess up your song.
Yeah.
It just means there's some, like, why I have fashionable less voiceover, but voiceover in a commercial world, you got horns. That's the biggest enemy you can ever have.
Yeah, if there's a sax solo in the middle of
Kill it. Take it out fast.
Or just even extend the rhythm. The intro groove.
Does it have to be mastered?
It should be.
It should be.
Yeah. So
and your instrumental too. Yeah. Instrumental and full mix should never come half baked to anybody that's gonna license it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have all my stuff mastered and then instrumentally mastered separately. But I never know if it needs a drum and bass mastering, and then just an acoustic and bass mastering.
It can help. And the spirit of it is not just the final product. A lot of the times we are presenting edits to the upper echelon of clients, and they want to nail it. You know, they want it to sound its best because they might not have an approval with this key stakeholder again. You know, it's like he or she is either going to approve this or they're not. And so that's why we might ask for stems early in the process, you know, whereas before I never would ask for them until we were pretty much settled, you know, going into agreements and stuff. It can help the artist.
We've actually worked on some projects with big brands that will also find a way to reuse the stems, and then you can keep getting placements from it because there is an acoustic version, or we like this melody, but we want the summertime version of this, and what can you do? So the bespoke custom side of it, if the brand has those stems and you're still getting writing credit for it, and we're able to, you know, re-envision it for the next season, it's really useful.
Yeah.
Your hard work will pay off too, because it's not just you. Editors had to deal with this. Rough cuts used to be, you know, and music used to be delivered as MIDI. Now you have people that are just too spoiled of seeing the exact form. And you have clients. Usually it's the clients that are driving that. They're like, well, they can't imagine the end point. They want to see it as if it's done.
Yeah.
So it's not just you, and don't think it's editors have to go through it. Production's usually shooting and everything, so it's usually your post that has to do with all of that. And the more finished it is, the less they have to think.
Yeah.
So then, if it's like, say for instance, I would have like, because I record at home, like I'll do the drums and the bass, so they're probably mic'd, but then I'll send it away to get mixed and send it away to get mastered. But then if they just wanted two particular tracks, with everything else muted, then would it be enough to just send it to one of those more affordable mastering online that's just kind of a color by numbers?
I would say when you send it to the mixer, get everything.
Have them bounce the stems.
Pretend you're making a song that's going to be released.
Yeah, and keep it simple, because the editors are not, the picture editors are not music editors, so they need to be able to just like grab the bass, grab the drums, and, you know, try not to have too many things combined into one stem.
Background vocals and lead vocals separate.
Yeah.
Oh, always.
Yeah. And one thing I should point out, and this is a completely different panel, but all of this stem stuff is going to be extremely useful as we push into the metaverse and do more interactive audio things, because they can use those to create immersive environments that change as you maybe move through spaces. And so it's going to be more and more of a thing. So
thank you.
I want to just touch on one thing you said very quickly. I heard you say, you know, is it helpful to be sending the information on the band members and what they do? I don't know if this is something that you're concerned about, but I just, as a general comment, if you do have some people that are well-known musicians participating in your music or contributing to your tracks, if they are not going to be okay with their name and likeness being used, do not put that in an email to someone you're sending songs to for license. That should be like a real at the beginning stage. If they're not okay with it, if their name being used for a commercial for 30 seconds, you should don't put it in an email and be like, these people were on this record, you know?
But also let us know.
Caveat, you know, this is not cleared with the people that were on it, but just so you know, I've got these cool people on this thing, you know?
And that actually came back on me. We were doing a TikTok thing and it's great with a really good artist, but he was launching his single right when we were about to launch this TikTok thing and it was going to mess up his release. So we kind of had to dodge around and figure out ways to kind of, you know, use the music and highlight an artist and let him do his own, you know, music thing because it was going to screw up his artist career. So
pseudonym.
Is there wording that you put in an email to just say like I'm the sole songwriter and I paid for the recording myself. Mm-hmm. Is there a way, like I've heard that you write like I own 200% or.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. You would say I own 100%. Both sides.
Yeah. One stop, easy clears.
Yep.
And like those are clearance. Magic terms for us.
Across all genres, especially hip hop too. Like please.
Especially hip hop.
Sample free. Like let us know that or how it's cleared.
Yes, no samples.
I think we're out of time. Thank you all for coming today. Thank you, Todd, Lila, and Joanna.